Caroline, Willie, and D. Mace chase in for Caroline today here in 102.5, 106.3 The Game alongside Derek Mason and Willie Donick, Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier on the ones and twos. And every Monday at this time, they talk to Teron Davenport from ESPN. TD, what's up?
What's going on?
Good to chat with you and talk a little Titans football. I'm going to ask you the same question that I asked D. Mace, and you and I were texting about this a little bit yesterday, but I am very, very excited about Calvin Ridley joining this team because that's a guy that has something to prove, has a chip on his shoulder. And I think the guy that's going to be playing across from him feels the same way in DeAndre Hopkins. Do you feel like those two are going to push each other and therefore we're going to see a pretty explosive offense with just those two receivers, not to mention everything else that they're going to have at their disposal?
Yeah, they'll definitely push each other. I thought it was pretty cool that Ridley said that he worked with or trained with Hopkins in the past, and he mentioned having a great receiver opposite him to push him. So he said himself that that's going to happen. And, you know, Hopkins, he's one of those self-inspired guys where no matter what, he's going to look to do the best because he's just self-motivated. And that's one of the things I really like about him. So it's going to be interesting seeing all that together.
Now, TD, do you see them making any moves with before draft in regards to free agency? I know after the draft there could be some moves made late into June because there will be players released after the draft. But before then, do you see the Titans making any more moves via free agency? And is there any other guy out there that you would even want to make a move on?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's possibilities. Look at Chase Young. That visit is still set to happen whenever that does. And you bring a guy like that in on a one-year prove-it type of deal, and you have the money next year to sign him long-term if he shows that he's worthy of that. He's only 24, so that's a move I would definitely look at. And he's a guy that would help make up for the loss of Danico Autry. You could move him inside, outside, use him in a very similar way, to be honest with you. So you do have that. I don't know that they make any other moves. There's Isaiah Simmons, possibly the linebacker. I believe he was last on the Giants. I don't know if they make any moves on the inside backer thing. I was really surprised that Jerome Baker left. Of course, you got Andrews Pete, who is here today, the offensive lineman from the Saints. So I think the Chase Young one would probably be the most likely one, but other than that, I'm not sure.
Now, they haven't really addressed the secondary. I know they brought, they made some signings, but, guys that we think can be long-term fixes at that position, they didn't sign. Obviously, the kid out of Cincinnati, they believe, coming here, if they can get 3 years out of him, considering his age, I think it would be a plus, but they need someone opposite of him. Chase did bring up possibly Christian Fulton, bringing him back. I wouldn't be opposed to that because I think the one thing that really hampered him, and everybody knows it, is the injuries. But if you put him in this type of defense, assuming that they play sort of the same way Baltimore played a year ago, an aggressive style defense, that may fit him a little bit better than what they were playing last year.
Yeah, it would definitely fit him better than what they were playing. He's at his best in man coverage. He has it just in conversations. He has said that, but he's willing to do whatever, but he admits that he's a man corner. That's what he does. So you do have that. I don't know that he wants to come back, to be honest with you. I think he's at a point where change of scenery is the move for him. And I mean, I get it. There was a lot that, went on here. And obviously a lot of the issues that he had are with somebody who's not here any longer, but still, I think, change of scenery is what he wants.
Teron, I want to ask you about another thing we were kicking around, and that is just the shaping of a team through free agency here in the situation that the Titans are in. I've seen some really interesting – some people have reached out to me and sort of challenged my thinking. I still think that I'm looking more at how do I get my team 2 years, 3 years from now in a position where I can open up a window where I can really compete. And I'm skeptical that you can do that, spending a ton of money on free agency. But this is a point I want to ask you. I do think they deserve a lot of credit for and you use this term a lot, paying the credit card bill last year, right? And not having it in a deal where you're losing your quarterback that you've had for years. You're losing Derrick Henry, who you've leaned on for years, Kevin Byard. There's not a lot of dead money out there in the coming years for that. So that's a big thumbs up, and that's one of the reasons they have this kind of budget.
Yeah, I mean, look, you have a bunch of contracts that just weren't good ones, and they're kind of taking the bull by the horns this year and taking a lot of that on, and that's going to allow them to have a lot of money next year. But, you know, you want to be able to sign your younger players, right? You want to bring in draft younger players that make it to a second contract, and that's something that this team hasn't really been able to do consistently, and that's why you have all that dead money.
So do you think that they – I guess that was my next question, because I haven't looked at some of these contracts that they're shelling out with a Ridley and stuff. Is this going to someday possibly hamper them in signing presumably good players they're going to have over the next 2 or 3 years, signing them to the next contract? Because that's where you start getting in cap trouble, right? You draft a lot of players. If they're good, you've got to sign them to that next contract, and you've got to be able to budget for raises.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're going to be fine. They're in good shape there because – they've managed to get some of those bad contracts off the books to the point now where, I mean, look, they re-signed Harold Landry. That's a pretty solid deal that they were able to do. They re-signed Jeffrey Simmons, and that market has readjusted itself. So you look at the contracts, there aren't really any outrageous contracts on the board anymore. And so I think that will allow them to be able to sign some of these players and consistently build the roster through free agency, but the draft is the way you go. That's how you build the roster, and they have to get better at doing that. I think last year was a good start.
Give us your insights on the Mason Rudolph contract. Any quarterback always has everybody weighing in on their opinions. We've certainly seen mixed ones coming our way. I think it's a pretty solid signing, but give me your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, it's nowhere near the tragedy that, you know, some are making it out to be. Look, you signed him to be your backup quarterback. You're not signing him to be in contention for the starting spot. You're signing him to be a backup. And for that role, Mason Rudolph is a pretty solid option. And I think context, like everything, it really applies here. You have to understand what his purpose is with this Titans team. And the thing that's interesting that I'm curious about is, okay, he's already been in this situation for both sides of it, to where he was that understudy for Ben Roethlisberger, and then he was that veteran that a younger rookie quarterback was supposed to be able to look at. So I think having both sides of the fence in his catalog, I think it'd be good. And it, to me, is a solid signing, and especially when you're considering at how much money it is.
We're talking to Teron Davenport from ESPN, and as I kind of go through, you know, my thoughts on the draft and where they're at, obviously still could bring in a couple of other guys, but now defensive line is a worry for me to give Jeffrey Simmons some help. Are there some guys that stand out to you in the draft that the Titans might be interested in?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, T'Vondre Sweat comes to mind immediately, and he's, you know, you're talking about a guy, like, tons of beef. Remember the old Wendy's commercial, "Where's the beef?" Well, it's right there. You know, he's like 365, 370 pounds, and he moves well for that size. So you got him. I think you look at some of the other guys, like Michael Hall Jr. out of Ohio State. He's another one that no one is really talking about, but he's one of those smaller, sudden D tackles, and I watched him give plenty of offensive linemen the business there at the Senior Bowl. And then you go ahead and you watch the tape against Notre Dame. You know, he and 44, I can't pronounce his name, those guys together, they gave Notre Dame's line fits, you know, including Joe Alt at times on their switches and stuff. So I think he's another guy. Byron Murphy, who was right there in the lineup at Texas with T'Vondre Sweat as well. So those are three off the bat that could draw interest.
Do you see any major moves? Because if you look at the Titans and where they sit at the seventh pick now, Chase and I discussed this. If a team, say Minnesota, you know, thinks, hey, they're sold on J.J. McCarthy and they feel they got to move up to get him. If you're the Titans, one, do you make the trade? And then two, if indeed you make the trade, if you can't get, say, one of those tackles, because that's the problem, that's the issue you would run into. If you do move down to 11th, someone else can then move above you to get the tackle you want in this year's draft. If indeed that does go that way, can you see them drafting not just a receiver, but then again, one of those defensive players, whether it's a corner or one of those inside backers?
Yeah, if they trade back, look, it would all depend on, okay, is Joe Alt on the board? Because if Joe Alt is off the board, then you look into Fashanu, you look at Fuaga, you look at Faotano, you look at Latham. Oh, some have Latham. And you look at some of these mocks, you know, Latham is ranked ahead of Joe Alt. Now, I wouldn't go that far, but you look at it, that's the case. So if you trade back and Alt is not there, I think you could comfortably go between 10 and 16 or so and still get a good shot at one of the tackles that could help you out. So you do have that. Look, you say the defensive guys, but, I mean, don't rule out Brock Bowers. You look at him and what he does. He's a playmaker. He's an impact player. So he's another one in a trade-back type scenario could be there. So there's a lot of ways that they could go. It's just really going to depend on how this board works. And I mean, I've even seen people have, you know, Malik Nabers ranked above Marvin Harrison Jr. So it's like, okay, is that really a set thing with the Cardinals when they pick? Or do the Cardinals trade out of that and another team comes up to get a quarterback? There's so many directions that the draft could go. And that's the beauty of it.
Yeah, I understand. I think that 3 through 5, if it doesn't go the way, which I do sort of predict that it will not go the way that many think it will. But if it doesn't, and it throws the draft off, and say one of those wide receivers are, you know, continue to fall down the board, then you're the Titans. What do you do? Do you take the tackle? Say if Oak's not there and Fashanu is, do you take the tackle? Or do you take the playmaker, in one of those receivers, whether it's Nabers, or Adunze, or even Marvin Harrison Jr., because there are some people that got, you know, Nabers higher on their draft board than Marvin Harrison is.
Yeah. And that's the whole thing I'm saying, how it's so unpredictable, and it comes down to how they weigh it out, right? Mm-hmm. How do they feel their left tackle situation could be addressed? And if Alt's on the board and Harrison Jr. is on the board, I mean, that's a really, really tough decision. Whereas you're weighing, okay, I know if I get this guy, for the most part, we're going to get solid to outstanding play for the next 10 years. But then do you want to be that guy that took Joe Alt over Marvin Harrison Jr., who becomes a perennial All-Pro and leading the league and receiving, like that doubt, that's enough to make you like, I might have to go for the bigger risk that has a bigger return.
Now, how would you grade this, you know, this portion of free agency for the Tennessee Titans, and how do you stack them up with everyone else in the AFC South? And I understand, you know, Houston has been making a lot of moves, and they feel they can because they got their franchise quarterback on a rookie deal, so they can try to build this team a little bit different from teams that you know are a little bit closer to paying their franchise quarterback or already have paid their franchise quarterback.
Yeah, Houston is a bit of an anomaly in that what you said, they recognize that they got their franchise guy. And they're building around him. You know, it's like the old Seahawks teams with Russell Wilson and even the 49ers with Kaepernick. So you have them. I think the grade is incomplete. I feel like they waited a bit on some of the options on the defensive line. Maybe they feel, you know, they have guys maybe in Quentin Bohannon, you know, that could come in and be a solid player over the stretch as opposed to just that short bit of time. Kyle Pecco is another guy. He's going to be a free agent, but when he was healthy, he played well. So I don't know. I think they waited there. I thought DJ Reader was the move to make, and I don't know what happened with it, but it didn't happen. So you have that. I really have to say incomplete. You know, you look at Jerome Baker, that's another one. Okay, what happened there? He was the ultimate compliment to Kenneth Murray. What are you going to do in that situation? And then the secondary, I thought Fuller was a guy that they could get, and he ended up signing. I forget where he went, but it was a cheap deal. He did it on Friday. Mm-hmm. And then even the trade for Morgan Moses, right? You talk about acquiring a tackle. Mm. I mean, Morgan Moses is a guy that continues to just, you know, not be on the Titans' radar, but yet he gives you outstanding play at right tackle, you know, so that's another one. So I really have to say incomplete. If I did have to give a letter grade, I would say, you know, like B- in that area, because there's still holes. The problem is what they have to do, it can't really be done in one off season, right? Like, yeah. You can't flip a roster like that into a Super Bowl contender in one off season. I don't care how much money you spend and how many picks you make.
Teron Davenport, presented by ESPN Bet Sportsbook. TD, why don't you tell us a little bit more about ESPN Bet?
Yeah, ESPN Bet is actually now live in Tennessee, so go check that out. It's the official sports book of ESPN, the only place you can find daily exclusives and offers with your favorite ESPN personalities and shows. All you got to do, you sign up today, and as a new user, you get $100 in bonus bets, and that's for making any sports book bet. You get all your favorite markets and bets, like in-game wagering, cross-sport parlays, teasers, and every single prop you could handle. That's ESPN Bet. Download today. You must be 21 or older and in Tennessee. For problem gambling support, you call or text the TN Red Line at 800-889-9789. Do be aware that terms and conditions apply. Check the app for details.
TD, you are my favorite ESPN personality, so we appreciate it as always. And we'll see you Friday when you're going to hang out with me.
That's right. Old Chase and TD show. Folks,
talking Mets Braves.
Right. There might be some Mets Braves mixed in there, no doubt, with baseball.
I'm all right with that.
Yes, sir. All right. We'll see you Friday. Thanks, TD.
All right. See you guys.
Yep. Teron Davenport, ESPN, Titans NFL Nation reporter. Yes, TD and I are going to sit in for Jared on Friday. So looking forward to doing that and working on some things for that show on Friday. Yes, my Braves bringing back Adam Duvall for the 16th time. So looking forward to that, having him back in the fold. But, Willie, it's almost time.
It is almost time. I'm not really excited about the Mets right now. I'm keeping my expectations low.
You're not ready to meet the Mets?
Oh, I'm always ready to meet the Mets, but I'm keeping my expectations low. We've got some problems. We overpaid the credit cards.
When does that never not
We're
happen?
Helping fund all of the great franchises out there in the smaller markets.
How's Max Scherzer working out?
Well, we have Acuna's brother because of him. And yeah. So that was probably the right move, honestly, because Scherzer and Verlander at some point are going to get too old to get people out and last for the whole season. So I didn't have a problem with those moves, really. But they're in the meantime, they spent too much money on guys that either are hurt or aren't playing for them anymore.
Yep.
So yep. They have got. That is an interesting question.
They got to pay the credit card.
It's the luxury tax. They are paying huge luxury tax money, which goes back into the pool for everybody else, mostly the smaller market teams. So it shows you that you can't just spend your way to a championship. You got to build through the draft and develop players.
You cannot
trust the future, Willie. Ronnie Mauricio. Just trust the future.
Well, He was ready, and then he tore his ACL. He's out. Mm. So that's typical Mets. And Kodai Senga, out. Sore shoulder.
Well,
hopefully not for too long. But
I would say that
we got issues.
Yeah, y'all got a bunch of issues, you know. Willie.
Yeah. Now, Dimas, your Tigers. It's a winnable
are
division.
They his Tigers.
It's a winnable division.
I take them.
Now, what you need to be doing, have you adopted the Orioles still? Because now they're still the real deal.
They're the real deal. Yeah, any team.
Now, that's
that
how
area.
You build a team through the draft. Now, they went through some ridiculous bad times, but they are loaded now. They've got the young talent. Okay. That's an exciting team. And the Tigers should be there.
They're de facto.
They're not
team.
Quite there. Yeah.
Baltimore is the Orioles.
Okay.
I take them.
Okay. You've got two.
Everybody
teams
said. Everybody heard that, right? The Orioles. So you know, I don't want people to say, "Oh, you're just not jumping on the bandwagon." Nah. Ever since Adam Jones gave me the bat,
okay.
Then I've been an Oriole fan. You know.
Yeah.
So well, there we go.
There you go.
Absolutely.
He's an Oriole.
Can't wait for some baseball. Speaking of that, Tim Corbin's doors heard on our airwaves.
Yep.
Smoked Auburn 3 straight. Auburn's ranked top 20.
That was a good way to start the SEC play.
Good SEC start. So they're starting to get it together. Early stumbles.
Is that 13 Vanderbilt? Straight that they've won now?
Is that right, Nick?
That is correct. Yeah. 13.
They're on a roll.
Good way to start the season. Yeah. So and glad to have Doors Baseball on. Obviously, the men's basketball team looking for a coach, and the women's team going dancing as they'll play Wednesday night in the first four. I still call it the play-in game against Columbia. So things are good right now. The Lady Raiders are in the tournament as well. They'll play Louisville on Friday. So, you know, our local teams, well represented.
Exactly.
Like to see a few more in
We'd
the coming years.
Like to see a few more.
Yeah. But congrats to those teams for sure, because it gets harder and harder every year to make it. There's the number of Division I teams is not shrinking. It's growing.
Yeah, no. Speaking of Vanderbilt and their coaching search, we'll talk to our buddy Mitch Light from The Athletic coming up next and kind of get his thoughts on that job and who might be available for that job, plus the brackets being out as well. It's Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace, or maybe today it's Chase, Willie, and D-Mace, like old times, as Caroline's on vacation. 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace, Chase in for Caroline today, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Here on this Monday, Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Derek Mason with you. Let's say hello to Mitch Light from The Athletic. Mitch, it's been a while. How are you?
You stole my words, Chase. I was going to say, Chase, it's been a while. I'm doing well. Hope you guys are doing great.
Doing fantastic. So let's start, before we get into the tournament, with Vanderbilt. They mutually agree to part ways with Jerry Stackhouse, so they now have an opening for the men's basketball coach. And I know I'm not going to be the first person to say this name, and I know that they're probably not going to entertain this name, but I feel like they should call Will Wade. What do you think?
Yeah, it's interesting. I would have said, how do I say this? Like, before the recent the climate change in college athletics with NIL and all that, I would have said 0% chance. I'll say 3% chance now. I mean, I know what you're saying. I just think the baggage, the behavior, you know, I just think it's too much. I mean, the guy wins. Won at VCU, he won at LSU. Obviously, he's winning at McNeese State. There's the obvious connections. You know, grew up in Nashville, season ticket holder, and all that. I would not say 0% chance, but I'd be very, very surprised.
Is that just because you mentioned the baggage, and we all know that the baggage is there? But don't you think that the way that the landscape of college sports has changed, that while it might be uncomfortable for Candace Story Lee and Vanderbilt to go down a road like that, that they almost have to maybe explore it just because the way things are? Because, look, he's not going to be at McNeese State forever. He's going to get another shot.
Right. I totally see what you're saying. And I like a lot of situations like this, not just Vanderbilt, any school. I like to put myself, you know, if I were the decision maker, would I do this? It's easy for us to sit here on talk radio, or you're talking to your buddies, oh, they should do this. But it's making the decision. If I were the decision maker, I don't think I would do it. Doesn't mean another decision maker won't do it, or different set of circumstances, you know, and we don't know all of the entire situation with what happened. We think, you know, we read stuff. That's why schools hire search firms, really, you know, to figure out all the dirt. And this is like all hypothetical, but like if someone commits a crime that you think is pretty egregious and they change the law a year later, they still committed that crime. You know, still did things that other schools weren't doing. And you can argue, oh, athletes should have been paid. Oh, I get that part of the argument, but he still did some pretty egregious things by all accounts that his competitors weren't doing and gave him a competitive advantage. We don't need to spend the whole time on Will Wade. It's a complex situation. I understand the arguments for, but I don't. I would not do it, and I don't think, like I said, I'd be very surprised if Vanderbilt did it.
But Mitch, don't you, like Chase said, whether it's Will Wade or someone else, I think Vandy is in a position where they need a splash hire. They need someone
that can,
you know, sort of galvanize, you know, that program once again. They need someone that can go out there and get those recruits. They only need one or two guys to come in here, and that can change the fortune at least for the first year. But they're going to have to do something to jumpstart this program once again.
Yeah, and one thing I was going to – to your point, too, one thing I was going to say with Chase's point, like, one thing about this, and let's preface this by saying whether it's college football, college basketball, mm-hmm. you don't know how things are going to turn out. Like, it's we've learned as fans of sports that we think we know, like, what's a good fit at schools, and so we don't know. But I'm saying that to say that this is a very good – there's a very strong pool, in my opinion, of mid-major coaches, not just for Vanderbilt, for all the openings. I think when you go back and look at Vanderbilt's last two rounds of hires, I don't think I don't think the candidate pool was as good. So to kind of what Chase was saying, like, if let's say you just – not that you should hire Will Wade because you don't like the other candidates, but it makes it easier not to hire him if there are other strong candidates, if my double negatives work there. But then, Derek, what you said, like, I just think they need a good coach. I mean, I don't mm-hmm. think you make a hire necessary to make a splash. You rejuvenate the program by winning games. So you hire the guy who is going, in your opinion, going to do that. Now, there are certain things now with the climate of college basketball where quick fixes are easier. So when if you're Candace Lane, you're going through this process, do you lean more towards someone with more connections and who's recruited the South or has been active in the portal at their previous stops? You know, those are things that you really have to consider more now than you did 5, 6, 7 years ago. But again, I think there's a really strong candidate pool out there, and it's just you got to find the right fit for Vanderbilt.
We'll talk with Mitch Light discussing the NCAA tournament, Vanderbilt basketball, so forth and so on. Now, Mitch, looking at the field of 64, and obviously we got the play-in games that will start in the next couple of days here. Which one of the teams outside of Kentucky and UT, because frankly, neither one of those teams look good in the SEC tournament. And I'm sure it was they look at it from the standpoint of, listen, the real tournament starts, you know, next week for them, which is this week. And they're putting more emphasis toward that. But beside those teams, which team out of the SEC do you give a bigger shot at going far in the tournament?
Well, I think Auburn's an obvious answer, so I'm not going to say them. And also, they have a rough draw. I kind of wouldn't be afraid to jump on the Alabama bandwagon. It's dangerous to rely on teams that rely on the outside shot a lot, but it's also if that team gets hot. Like, do you remember when VCU made the Final Four? Like, they were not a good shooting team. They shot great for four straight games and made a miraculous run. Alabama is a better shooting team. I'm just using them as an example. So, like, they are clearly, when they're at their best, can beat anyone. Now, their defense is obviously a huge issue. Alabama seems to be one of those high-ceiling, low-floor teams that if they're not shooting well, they're not playing solid defense, they could get bounced early. But and it kind of goes against the, you know, don't want to jump on the team that had a really great run in the conference tournament, Auburn. So I'd maybe lean a little bit more towards Alabama.
Now, what do you think of A&M? Now, they've had UT's number all season. And those two guards, but it goes to what you're saying. It's like, can you live, you know, in the turning back by shooting outside all the time? But those two guards, Taylor and the other guard, these guys, when they're on, it is very hard to beat them.
Yeah. I mean, Wade Taylor's, you know, I don't think he had the year that a lot of people thought he would. But they had a strange season. You know, they midseason four-game losing streak, they lost to Vanderbilt. And then they seemed like they played well in the SEC tournament a lot of times recently. You know, we throw out a cliche, guards win in the NCAA tournament. Obviously, Williams is always has his teams in the NCAA tournament. So, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all if they did well. Like you said, veteran guards, good coach. I'm just a little concerned about their inconsistency throughout the season.
Talking to Mitch Light from The Athletic. And Mitch, let's get to – and I read Kyle Tucker's piece, which if people are out there, if you want to you know, read a good comprehensive list of some of the guys out there that you probably don't know. He does a good job, I think, of breaking down some of these guys from several programs that are in the tournament. You're going to see them. Maybe one of them will pull a big upset and you'll know a lot more about them. But of sort of the candidate pool that you referenced there. So who among this group take away the guys that we do know, like Will Wade, who we discussed, or Chris Mack, who a lot of people are looking at, who's out there. Who among that mid-major pool, up-and-comers, intrigues you?
Couple guys. Kyle Smith, whose name's been attached to several jobs. Head coach at Washington State. One thing that I like about him, I like guys who succeed at difficult jobs. And, you know, here, I looked this up, and, you know, he was at Columbia, San Francisco, and Washington State. Columbia has had two winning Ivy League seasons since 1993, both under Kyle Smith.
That's a long time.
He had a winning record.
That's 30 years.
Play. Yeah, 30 winning record in league play at San Francisco. Washington has had five winning Pac-12 seasons since 1993. Two under Tony Bennett, obviously now at Virginia, and three under Kyle Smith. Like, unprecedented to have three straight winning Pac-12 seasons. So he's a guy that's clearly has built programs, very well-respected guy. Incidentally, Florida's coach Todd Golden was at San Francisco with Kyle Smith, took over for Kyle Smith when Smith went to Washington State, and then obviously Golden did well there. He's at Florida now. So he's an intriguing guy. Nico Medved is very well respected. He got going at Furman. Furman plays a really entertaining style of basketball. I'm drawing a blank on his name. The head coach replaced Medved. Medved went to Drake for 1 year, and he's got Colorado State in the NCAA tournament. Josh Schertz, Indiana State, obviously they did not make the tournament. You saw Schertz's name. I know St. Louis is after him, but I don't think that's a done deal by any stretch there. But Google Josh Schertz, and he did. I listened to a podcast with him once with Doug Gottlieb a couple weeks ago, and he's got a really interesting story. The Athletic, we wrote a good story on him, but he went to Lincoln Memorial Division II school in Eastern Tennessee, and they were horrible when he got there. They got good immediately. He went 214-39 in league play. It's 13 years at Loyola. I wrote my notes LMU. I knew I was going to do that. Memorial University. And then he went to Indiana State, turned that program around. So those are some names. Bucky McMillan, obviously the coach at Stanford, former high school coach, has done well. Pat Kelsey. Now, I'm interested in your take on this, Willie. Like, Pat Kelsey is obviously a very good coach. He's got a great record. But he's been at Winthrop and College of Charleston, two teams that are consistently, like, the best, better programs in their league. So it's like, I prefer, like, the Kyle Smith, the guy who's shown he can win at difficult jobs, rather than a guy that was just able to sustain success where others have wanted that program. Quite honestly, that was, looking back, maybe that was a knock on Bryce Drew. Valparaiso at the time, now they're in the Missouri Valley. They were in the Horizon League, or forget, maybe whatever it's called. They were, like, the best program in that league. He did a great job there, had a great record, but he sustained what previous, you know, his dad and his brother built there. So kind of rambling there, but those some guys, some names that you'll hear a lot about.
It's a deep pool. I agree with you. It is noteworthy that Bryce Drew, since leaving Vanderbilt, has done very well at Grand Canyon. He's back in the tournament again. So that it kind of has you going. Well, you could.
Another and I'm not taking any
I mean, they won't. But I mean, remember, that was a Malcolm Turner in his little meteoric rise and fall as the athletic director. He did make that decision to dump Bryce Drew, pull the plug after one awful year. And
worked real well.
And you kind of look at it and say, well, you know, what was the – I mean, he's done well. I got to give him a lot of credit there.
Let me interject, and I don't want to – I mean, Bryce – not taking it away from Bryce Drew, there's another example. Grand Canyon is the best job by far in the WAC. They've got, like, pretty good NIL situation in that league. Look at the teams in that league. There is not there. They have a great home court advantage because they win. He has done a great job there, but it's also clearly the best job in that league. And if you're a coach, I mean, that's what you should do. Look for the best jobs in leagues. And that's why, you know, some of those guys have great success.
All right. So let me ask you about Casey Alexander, because you and I have watched him very closely for a long, long time. And I kind of say to myself, when I look at some of these names that you're bringing up that I don't know, but I look at the track record, and from afar, you say, wow, that's impressive. You know, guy that's done really well at Colgate for a long time. You know, all of these guys that get mentioned. Yeah. But then I say, well, right in your backyard, you've got a guy that has done similar things. And if you're looking from upstate New York, Casey Alexander would be a really attractive guy that would say, wow, he's won for a long time. Sometimes I feel like we look past the guy that's right on your block and knows a lot about Nashville. I don't know what Vanderbilt's thinking is there, but I know there's always been a debate, even going back to Rick Byrd and even before that, Don Meyer, way, way back, of saying, could you translate success at Belmont or Lipscomb to Vanderbilt? But that's probably the question that any mid-major coach is going to have.
Yeah, and it's fascinating. He, you know, the knock on Casey is he's never been part of a Power Five or, you know, major conference staff, never had to recruit at that level. But there are a lot of pros, you know, clearly a really good offensive coach. I mean, they're, correct me if I'm wrong, Willie, like his, I'm not saying the system, but the style of basketball kind of reminds me a little bit of Kevin Stallings, you know, really good offensive team.
Attention to detail, shooters.
Yeah, shooters. Sometimes didn't play great defense. They tried to play great defense. He has done a good job. That's a pretty big leap going from the OVC to Missouri Valley, and they are, you know, they made that leap pretty successfully. They were one of the better teams in the league. They had a midseason slump this year.
And injuries had something to do with that, for sure.
Yes, very intrigued by that. And I'll say, you know, again, I'm not the decision maker, and if they asked me, I would make the decision for them. But, like, he's a guy that I think in other cycles would be a stronger candidate. Now, he might be a candidate. And you make an interesting point there, and I was thinking about this yesterday. My daughter Zoe, she was looking at all these schools all over the place. She loves to travel. One day we were driving to school, her senior year of high school, and she said, Dad, I want to go to Vanderbilt. I was like, really? She goes, I don't want to not go just because it's in Nashville. Like, you know, you're supposed to go away to school. And I was thinking, like, Vanderbilt, if they like Casey Alexander, hire him. Don't not hire him because he's at Belmont and people think you're just doing the easy thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
I don't know if that
and I think
sense.
Also you look at your appreciation for Nashville, which Casey Alexander not only has coached at Belmont forever, but he grew up here. He went to Brentwood Academy. Yeah. Like, I think it would mean something, and he would look at it as a destination. This is just me thinking out loud. I don't know for sure, but no, I do think you take a long look at that. I think in this day and age of NIL and everything, I do think that brings something to the table.
Yeah, it knows the DNA of the program. Not saying he grew up, I don't know what he grew up fan, might have grew up a UT fan, no idea. But, you know, clearly understands the program. And, like, I talk to friends, you know, we all have the same opinion. Like, if they hire Casey Alexander, he's a good coach. I mean, I really do think he's a really good coach. And I would probably, I'm trying to think, I know Fran Dunphy coached at, Temple and LaSalle, but he might, Casey would set the record for coaching at three schools in the same city, three Division I schools in the same city. Maybe you can have, like, maybe 15 really good years here, then go over to TSU for a year or two.
Just knock it all out. Mitch, appreciate it as always. Good to talk to you, and enjoy the tournament.
All right, guys. Take care.
Mitch Light from The Athletic joining us here on Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace. We'll come back. Put a bow on things next. 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase, not Big Joe, Willie, D-Mace, kind of used to that, in for Caroline today, here on this Monday. Appreciate Mitch Light for joining us. Willie, how do you think that's going to turn out? Is it going to be a name we know, or is it going to be an up-and-comer?
I think they're going to do...
Like, is Chris... I feel like Chris Mack is in the mix, too.
You know, I do hear that Chris Mack... is interested in the job. I also don't know, is Chris Mack, does he want to come to Vanderbilt, or is Chris Mack just trying to say, I'm ready to get back in the game?
Yeah.
How many years has he been out? For a while, he was probably one of the more consistent winners in the game. When he was at Xavier, he did a really good job for a long time. Then he went to Louisville, and he was doing really well, and then hit the wall. He had a kind of controversial thing that happened. Then they started losing, so his stock went right down the drain. And so he's been sitting out there. So I don't know. He is definitely a guy that I think you do your homework on, maybe talk to. Because he's done it, right? Mm-hmm. He's won. He's a good coach. But then I would say don't sleep on all these guys that would look at Vanderbilt as this is the job that I want. This is the institution I want to be
at.
But
I think
they need to win.
They need to find somebody that wants to challenge that job. Because I think it can be a really good job.
I don't think that will be a problem for the ones that they end up interviewing. They're going to get people that want the job.
It can be a good job.
It can be a good job as long as D-Mace pointed out strongly, and I agree with him. You have to set that coach up with mm-hmm. the new era that they're in. The NIL, that's got to be part of it. And these coaches that have won big at the mid-major level, it is a different formula when you get into the SEC where everybody's paying. It has a budget for this kind of thing.
That'll do it for us. Good to sit in with you guys. I'm going to hang out a little bit this week with Caroline out, so we'll have more reunions for sure. That'll do it for us. Back at it tomorrow at 11, Chasing Big Joe at 9. But up next, Stillman and Company here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Be loved and love on your people. Peace.